If you've got teenagers in your house, especially boys, there's a good chance you know about Minecraft. It's a computer game, not especially complicated. It involves building things. It looks low-tech, actually is pretty low-tech, but this game is having an impact. Teachers, sociologists, parents, they're all taking an interest, and some even say it's fun. I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we talk about how a computer game can be more than a game and how the ways that we think about learning and community are different in this digital age. Later, we'll bring a little of the Kansas City Fringe Festival to our studios. It's becoming a premier arts event for our area each year. We'll get a preview of some of the theater, the music, the film, the burlesque. Wait, no burlesque in the studio? Anyway, it's all ahead on Central Standard, after the news. We're talking today about a game, a computer game. I know some of you are reaching for your radio dial already, but I don't think you want to do that. Not yet, because the game we're talking about, a relatively simple game that is being played right now by thousands of middle schoolers and older and younger people too, near you, is probably the most popular game out there among kids right now. It's changing things, changing gaming, changing education, and how we think about teaching and learning, and maybe changing how we think about community and relationships and society. I'm Brian Ellison. This is Central Standard on KCUR. The game is Minecraft. It's not just kids who are playing it either, and today we look through its lens at our world. I think you'll find it fascinating. Later, we'll have a preview of the Kansas City Fringe Festival, but first, Minecraft. And before we bring on our experts, and we've got some real experts today, we want to offer a brief primer in this game for those who, like me, were completely in the dark about it. We searched far and wide to find the best person in Kansas City to talk about this with the most knowledge and experience. Turns out to be our producer, Matthew Long Middleton. Matthew, always good to have you on the air.
Oh, thank you, Brian. You're being very gracious.
Well, we'll see about that. So what kind of game is Minecraft?
Well, it's an open sandbox game, which just means that the world goes on essentially infinitely. They're called blocks or stacks that chunks that get loaded, which is a huge volume of area, and so it just keeps going and going and going. You can literally explore this world endlessly.
So you're a person, you get dropped into this picture of a world.
Yeah, it's very simple. There's the opening screen, and you can choose single player, multiplayer, and once you generate the world, all of a sudden you're dropped down. Usually you're near ocean or some kind of water, and you're in a different kind of biome. Each kind of world constructs a number of biomes, like a desert or mountains or hills or plains.
So is there a point? Does someone win and someone lose in this game?
That is kind of the coolest thing about it. It was actually the thing that was most confusing for me at the start, like getting introduced to it. There really is no end game. There is no end to this game. It literally is just this open world where you can explore and build to your heart's content.
Now, I know a lot of kids play this game. That's what I've been hearing anyway. Why do you play it?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I got introduced to it. The first time I ever saw it was about 2 years ago. When I was in Brooklyn, I was visiting my girlfriend's cousin, and he was playing it, and he wanted to show it to me because he was just like so excited about it. And it took me a little while to get used to it, but then my brother introduced it to me, and he started playing it, and we started playing it together. And and he lives in Massachusetts, and I live here, and it's a way for us to almost literally spend time together, but in a digital space. I understand that you actually got introduced to it from a few kids as well.
That's right. I actually I know a number of kids, a family who I'm good friends with, and actually spent a couple minutes talking with some of them a couple nights ago about what's going on with the game called Minecraft. Okay, so Ian, what's the attraction of this if there's no competition, there's no competing?
Well, it's a very open world kind of game. You can basically do whatever you want. There's different modes you can...
It's like a life.
You can play with friends, or you can play by yourself. Like, I had an old world on one of my, on my old computer, where I had, like, a giant fortress, like a giant wooden castle, and I had, like, a rail track. So here I can build a rail track right now. I had, like, an experience grinder. I had a bunch of redstone and diamonds. Lots of different things.
And are those things more cool if you have more things? Is it just the fact that it's fun to have the gadgets, or is there a point to all this?
Well, I mean, it's sort of a point to yourself that you just try and get as much stuff as you can. You just try and, like, it's a big ambition. Like, the first time you get diamonds, that's always a big moment that everyone talks about. Like, my first diamonds that I got and stuff like that. Yeah, whenever you're playing with other people, it's nice to get all this stuff. So, like, if you're fighting or anything, you can have the better armor and the better weapons so that you can kill them.
Show me a weapon.
I'll show you a weapon.
Here's show a sword. Me a weapon.
Here's a diamond sword. This is the best sword you can get without enchanting. If you want to enchant, you just let me get on it.
So, Simon, you sometimes play this with your brother, right?
Yeah.
And what do you like about it?
Well, it's just that it's like an endless game, so you can just do whatever you want. And that's basically why I like it. And, like, the fact that people can do, like basically, like, anything with it if they really want to. So I think that's really cool about it, too.
Thanks, guys.
No problem.
That was Ian Witsit, who's 14, he'll be 15 this month. Simon Witsit, who's 11, and insisting that he should be part of the conversation as well. That was Julian Witsit, who's 7, who, although he doesn't play it himself, he's already interested in what his big brothers are doing. It seems like it's a game for all ages, Matthew.
Yeah, I always struggle, and I think they kind of struggle to explain, like, what makes it so cool. You use kind of vague terms like, oh, it's just endless, and you can do anything, but in that way, it's just this incredibly safe space where you can experiment with quite literally anything, and people use it to express their creativity and their imagination. You go through this world, and in order to build these things, you have to harvest things. So, for example, like, the first thing that you typically do is you go up to a tree and you knock it down with your fists, essentially, which is a little silly, but it's a game. And then through that wood, you can then craft – that's where the Minecraft comes from – other tools. And then you use, like, wood tools to then dig down into the earth to get stone tools. And then stone tools lead you to iron, because you can dig further and further deeper and get more and more resources. And so there's a whole hierarchy of these things you can develop. And you're one of the people in the clip mentioned a redstone. And what you can do with that is actually create really simple computers. It's essentially a binary system. And people have done that. Within the world of the game, people have, like, developed binary computers, a 16-bit computer, just using the redstone and the other things in the game. So you can do almost anything with Minecraft.
That's Matthew Long Middleton. He's a very busy man who stays sharp by playing Minecraft during the 3 hours each day that he's not working on KCUR. Matthew, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Brian.
So that's what Minecraft is. So now joining us to talk about why Minecraft matters are some experts who've actually published papers and done a lot of study on this game. First of all, Bronwyn Stuckey. She's a fellow at the Center for Games and Learning at Arizona State University, but she's joining us from her home in Sydney, Australia, where it's the middle of the night. Bron Stuckey, thank you for being on Central Standard.
Oh, thank you, Brian, for having me.
We're also joined by Sean Duncan. He's assistant professor and research scientist in the Center for Learning and Technology at Indiana University. He's joining us from there, from their studios in Bloomington, Indiana. Sean, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So you both are scholars of gaming, right? Which I have to say there are teenagers across our listening area realizing they've got a future in academia now. what do you study? What are you trying to learn from studying gaming? Bron Stuckey?
Well, my background is actually in communities of practice research as well. So games, that's the perspective that I take on games. So my interest is in largely massively multiplayer games and what we can see happening in not just the engagement in the game, but the engagement of the players with each other in those spaces. So that's the area that I'm most interested in, and that's why Minecraft is fairly captivating.
And Sean Duncan, you've written actual academic papers in journals about Minecraft.
Yes, I have. My position is I'm an assistant professor in the learning sciences program here and a part of the Center for Research on Learning and Technology. And as part of that program, we're really interested in seeing what kinds of new technologies, new forms of learning are being facilitated by technologies. And gaming is just one of those. My PhD actually was from the Games Learning and Society group at University of Madison University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we've had a long tradition from that group in looking at games as being, I would say, change drivers for the educational system, seeing the kinds of engagement and learning that people do with games as being inspirational for helping us rethink educational systems.
Sean, you heard our description, our conversation with some kids about the game. What did we leave out? What do you think of as the salient facts about Minecraft?
Oh, that's interesting. I think a couple of the really interesting things for me about Minecraft are exactly what Matthew described, that the game is very immersive, that you have to recombine elements of the game. But one thing that was left out is how do kids learn how to do that? Number one, they learn how to do that by talking to other kids and playing with other kids. So there's a really interesting opportunity here to look at how kids mentor each other and apprentice each other in learning how to play a game. But on top of that, kids go online to learn how to play the game. There are voluminous resources online for learning how to play, for serving as online resources, online references. And when we care about things like digital literacies for kids, Minecraft is an obvious thing to look at because kids are motivated to learn how to do things in the game and then go online to teach themselves how to do that.
And Bron Stuckey, when you have encountered kids and communities who are playing Minecraft, what do they tell you is important about it? What stands out to them as what makes this game what it is?
I think the actual citizenry of the space. I work with a number of groups in schools around the world that where the kids set up the server for their environment, and they've created the charter. They've made decisions about rules, like starting a society. They've thought about, you know, what rules will be required for this community and who belongs to the community and who doesn't, and how they plan to engage in positive ways with each other. And I think watching kids do that, and part of the spaces that I work with, we believe children learn best in the company of trusted adults. So we encourage parents and teachers to play with their kids and to be part of a community as co-learners with the students. So I think that actual engagement and as Sean described, the mentoring and the leadership that kids develop in these kinds of spaces is fascinating. And they're coming to understand a lot of the things about society. It's a microcosm in some respects. When the kids have free rein on a server to set up the conditions under which the server will run.
You know, anecdotally, when I've mentioned this program to people I know, they say, oh, my grandkids play that. My kids play that. It seems like a lot of people are playing it. Do we have numbers on that, Sean Duncan? Do we know the reach of this game?
Well, we do have some sense of how many people are, well, at least we have a sense of how many products have been sold by the company. They've released some information on that. I believe the last I saw was around 20 million copies of the game sold across platforms. That was around January. I did look on their website this morning, actually, and it says that about 11 million people have bought the game through the website, which would be the PC and Mac version, and about almost 15,000 people have bought the game just within the past 24 hours.
15,000 in the last day. Wow.
Yep. Yep.
As you mentioned, Sean, there's the way that people learn to play this game is not just by playing it. There seems to be a whole world of literature in the form of online communities and wikis and tutorials online. Who's producing these? Is this the adult part of the world of Minecraft?
I don't think we know for certain, but I would wager on that. I think that there's initially a lot of adult interest in the game. The game came out in 2009 initially. In fact, its development history is really quite interesting in that it was developed really very much out in the open. The creator, Marcus Persson, who goes by the name Notch online, just shared it on an online forum. And said, here's a build of a game that I'm putting together. It's similar to some of these other indie games that you might like. Give me some feedback. Tell me what you think. And then he iterated it out in the open. He changed it on feedback from people on these forums, which were largely adults, largely hobbyist game developers, and then eventually formed a company, Mojang Specifications, that is now further developing the game. So in terms of who is making the game, I think from the very, very beginning of the game, he wanted to have the input of other people, other adults, other game aficionados into the mix of how one plays the game. And actually, I think one of the most genius elements of the game's design is what Matthew was describing earlier, which is the game plunks you down in a landscape initially, and it doesn't really tell you what to do. How are you going to figure out what to do if you've just happened to purchase this game and throws you into the middle of a beach with a couple of trees and you don't really know that you need to punch the tree in order to figure out how to get the wood to make the wood axe, to get the stone axe, and so on? So people have very quickly made wikis and made made other sorts of resources online to document what they've discovered in playing the game and what has changed over the years of the game's development.
Yeah, there's video after video online on YouTube of people simply playing the game and talking about it.
Brian, can I just jump in on that?
Please.
And just say, in my experience, many, many kids are making those videos. One of the first things when kids conquer some challenge or learn to do something that's quite difficult in the world, they want to go and make a how-to video to put on YouTube so that they can help other kids learn that. And I think there's something really interesting happening in these kind of virtual world game spaces that I see a spirit of generosity engendered that I don't see in a lot of other kinds of games. So I think, you know, we shouldn't be tricked into thinking it's only adults making or older kids making videos, because I've had experience with children as young as four making videos on how to make a trap door or, you know, how to lock a door. Simple things, but challenges that they've conquered in the game, and then they proudly want to go and record that to share with other people.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about Minecraft and how it seems to be more than a game that has real impact on learning and on community. I want to invite our listeners to be part of the conversation. Do you play Minecraft or do your kids? And I especially want to invite kids, if you're listening to this show right now, to give us a call at 816-235-2888. Tell us why you play it. What do you think is so great about Minecraft? 235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCURCST. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Brett has actually already called in. Brett is from Kansas City, Missouri. Brett, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello.
So I understand you like to play Minecraft. Is that right?
It's my favorite game.
Why is that?
Because I think it's so cool that you can do literally anything you want. You can be creative. You can make a city, you can make a castle, you can make a large mansion if you wanted to. I just think it's really fun that you can do all that in one game.
Brett, how much time do you think you spend playing Minecraft every day?
Like 4 hours, maybe.
Wow. Okay. So you must really enjoy it then.
Mm-hmm.
And how old are you, Brett?
10.
Brett, I really appreciate you calling us. Thanks for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay.
So Brett mentioned something that I heard from Simon in that audio clip we heard earlier as well. The freedom, the ability to do anything you want, seems to be really important. Is that what attracts a lot of kids to the game, Braun?
Yeah, I think the fact that they're in charge is an opportunity kids don't have today. And as my friend Marianne Malmstrom in New York would say, you know, this is the playground kids don't have after school and other places anymore. You know, we don't let them play in the street, and this is their street. They're able to make up their own games, design objects, build rules, you know, all those little play experiences that kids may be otherwise not getting in their local environment. And I think that's why it's captivated kids, because they're in charge.
You know, if you see the game in progress, it's very blocky. It looks a little bit like Legos on the screen. And it occurs to me that in some ways this isn't so different from Legos. It's taking something very simple and building something with it, building whatever you want. Sean, is this just a new digital version of something old?
Well, I think it's really tapping into a real interest with kids for creating things, and adults, frankly. I think there's still a huge adult population playing the game. I want to build a little bit on what Braun was saying, too, that I think that's a really fantastic point. Replicating backyard play is something that I've seen in some of the studies that I've done, too. I did an interview with a 9-year-old homeschooled kid a couple of years ago who was really, really into playing Minecraft. And he was homeschooled, and he didn't really have the same kind of social connections, I would argue, that kids who are in schooling environments had. So his parents bought him a Minecraft server. Suddenly, he was playing with other English-speaking kids from Australia, Canada, and the UK. And what they were doing was not playing Minecraft to try to build the biggest building or to try to explore or to try to actually build, beat the Ender Dragon, which is a part of the game. What they were actually doing is doing magic shows, doing races with the pigs within the game. they were doing essentially backyard play. And I found that to be completely fascinating, that for a kid who is being homeschooled, this provides a way to connect with other kids, but not just other kids locally, other kids internationally. And I found that to be a really fascinating use of the game.
816-235-2888 is the number to call to be part of the conversation. Brent in Kansas City, Missouri, welcome to the program.
Hello. I don't really think that it's all that positive. Replicating backyard play is not backyard play. Social interaction via a game is not real social interaction. It's like a chat room. People say, well, I can be myself in a chat room. Well, you're not really being yourself. You're being what you think of yourself in a chat room because you're not actually having to interact with other people. And I feel this game's the same way. And I have a niece that we went to a T-Bones game, baseball game. She sat there over half the game just playing, would not, I mean, she's always on it. And I know studies have been done that, you know, you get endorphins from accomplishing things on a video game that stimulates the reward center in your brain. And I don't see sitting there staring at a screen for hours on end as being something good. And there may be positives to it, but I think in the real world, you could find the exact same positives plus far more benefits from that.
Okay, Brent, I appreciate your perspective. I'm sure you're not the only one who feels that way. Sean, Duncan, what do you say to parents or to other concerned adults who say, gosh, it seems like kids are getting addicted to this. This isn't a good thing.
Yeah, well, I think it's a genuine concern, but I also don't want to overblow it. I think responsible parenting when it comes to managing a kid's degree of play with Minecraft or any other game or, frankly, television or frankly, any other kind of outside play, I think is a thing to be concerned about. When it comes to Minecraft in particular, the backyard play that I find particularly interesting are things that connect kids to forms of backyard play that, quote-unquote, backyard play that they couldn't do in the face-to-face environment. And what other way are we going to be able to have a kid in rural Ohio be able to meaningfully interact with and talk to and create things with a kid in Australia and a kid in the UK, a kid in Canada all at the same time? And the kids that I looked at were recording YouTube videos and posting them online and learning how to use Skype and learning how to edit videos. So they're developing a variety of digital literacy skills on top of the play that doesn't make it a mindless activity, that makes it something that's actually productive and could be something that the kids pick up later as a personal interest.
Bron Stuckey, we heard the 10-year-old who called in earlier say that he played 4 hours a day. Do you, as an education expert, have any concerns about that amount of screen time for young kids?
I definitely would. And as Sean said, it's about responsible parenting. I mean, I think too much of anything is not healthy for children. And I think Minecraft offers one thing on a rich palette of experiences for kids to engage in. So I think, you know, any over experience is of concern. But I want to pick up on the point that was made about real and virtual. And I noticed Sean use the wording real and face-to-face, and I use the terms real and physical because, rather virtual and physical, because the experiences kids have in these games are real. The friendships they make in these games are real. Even if they don't see those people in a face-to-face context, they still feel attached to people. They develop ties. They log into hoping to see their friends online. These sorts of things are as real in many contexts. So I think we have to stop saying virtual and real as if they're, you know, two ends of the spectrum, because it's not quite the case. So a lot of, but I wouldn't want to live out all my life in the virtual space either. I mean, I think, you know, it's all about healthy balance.
Let's talk to William in Leawood. William, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
How old are you, William?
I'm 12.
Okay, and so you are something of a Minecraft expert yourself, I understand.
I'd like to think that.
How often do you play?
A lot. very much.
What do you like about it? What's important to you about Minecraft?
I like that in the real world, you can't just go outside and build a giant mansion, but in Minecraft, I can.
Uh-huh. So you can do things you couldn't do otherwise.
Yes.
I understand you own a server, is that right?
Yes.
Tell us what that means.
So there are computer web servers, and I can run Minecraft off of one, and other people can join it. So I could have a world with maybe three or four other people playing with me.
Wow. And do you feel like you're kind of the boss? I mean, do you have to show a certain amount of leadership to make all this happen?
Yes, and if I don't, everything gets blown up, which has happened before.
Well, William, I really appreciate you calling. Thanks for sharing a little bit of your Minecraft world with us.
Thanks.
Yeah, you know, William mentions we've only talked about the exploring and the building, but some bad things do happen sometimes in the game, right, Sean?
Oh, yes, definitely. In fact, the child I was talking about earlier, who was playing with his friends online, stopped playing quite as much Minecraft and moved on to other games. And I was asking him why he was doing that. And frankly, it became some of the issues that the caller just brought up. A 9-year-old is now having to be put into the role of managing other kids' play, managing what are called griefers in games, which are people who will log into a server and just want to destroy things. Sometimes those are other teens. Sometimes those are particularly maladjusted adults, maybe. But the tasks of doing that can be overwhelming to a kid. And for this particular child, the move from play to work was one that was not really interesting him anymore. And he ended up moving on after that.
We're going to need to take a break, but when we come back, we'll continue talking about Minecraft and about computer games more generally, how Minecraft and these other games are shaping and transforming young and not so young minds in ways that other media do not. You're invited to be part of the conversation. Email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Follow us on Twitter @KCURCST. I'm Brian Ellison. This is Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking today about Minecraft, the game that has swept the nation and kids are playing, but also learning, and in some ways changing how we communicate, how we think about learning. I'm joined by Bron Stuckey. She's a fellow at the Center for Games and Learning at Arizona State University. She's joining us from her home in Australia. Also, Sean Duncan. He's assistant professor and research scientist at Indiana University. We are also inviting you to be part of the conversation. You can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org, or you can tweet at us. We're @KCURCST. You know, Sean, I want to step back from some of the details of the game to ask mm-hmm. more broadly, what do you think are some of the effects that this game is having on society and culture? Is it actually changing anything, or is it just is it a passing fad that will go away soon?
Well, I don't know if it's a passing fad that will go away soon, but I do think it's reflective of certain kinds of changes in culture. One of the most interesting things to me about this game is that it is, well, like I mentioned earlier, it is very much a grassroots, developed from very much out in the open by essentially a hobbyist programmer. He was a professional programmer, but he was making this game on the side. And it's turned into a multi-million dollar product for him. That's something that we don't really think too much about when we're thinking about gaming culture. Very often, media representations of gaming are the kinds of games that you'll find at a GameStop or at a Walmart. Very often, those kinds of games have shifted towards shooter-style games. And there's been, I think, legitimate concern over whether or not that is really what games should be. So we see games like Minecraft providing an alternative, showing that anyone can make a game. Potentially anyone can make a very, very successful game. And this particular game, I think, has appeal because it allows anyone to go into it and then really craft the experience to be something they want it to be.
Let's take a call from Joe in Kansas City, Missouri. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a teacher, and for one of my projects, I had the kids pick something to do that I had to create, but basically I have a high-functioning autistic student, and he chose to build a guitar in Minecraft. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I'll see where this goes. And so he made the guitar, but then he used something called Note Blocks, which is a part of the game, and he made the guitar actually function where you could play it, and it was tuned like a real guitar, and had each fret was spaced correctly. So that was really interesting to me that the game could draw that out of him.
Wow, and this all happens, this is all a game within the game. The kid is able to do this on his own.
Yeah, he did all that. I didn't give him direction. I just watched him go. It was pretty amazing.
Joe, thank you so much for the call. Bronze Ducky, is this a pretty typical story? And Joe mentioned that this was an autistic student. Are students on the autism spectrum especially using this game?
And my experience is those are some of the kids that are finding themselves in games like Minecraft because it meets some of their needs. And also kids are engaging their imagination. The previous caller asked about addiction and kids spending too much time. But the alternative in kids' lives is television or something that's a little more passive. And I think, what's exciting about this is it's unleashing imagination and letting kids use that to design and build. And on servers, and we haven't even touched on the mods that you can add to a server, which are, adaptations you can make to the capability of the server so that you can run it in many different ways to have many different capabilities. So, the experience I've had of kids from 4 years old through to adult engaging on Minecraft, it's very extensible. And the servers that I work with have multi-age kids on them. And those sort of spaces are really supportive and positive. And so kids like the student that this teacher was just describing are really thriving in those spaces.
Let me ask both of you, do you feel like the world has something to learn? Here you have people who are dropped into a world, they start from scratch, they form communities, they have to make their own rules, they have to sort of create a governance structure that works. Is there something here for the broader community to learn from, the way worlds, the way nations of the world interact, or the way people in a workplace that don't get along could work out their differences?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the interesting things about Minecraft is, and this I think Bron can speak to this as well, is that the it's really the latest in a long line of virtual worlds studies, virtual world sites. This is a field that really popped up about 10 years ago, and there was a lot of interest, not just from educators, but from economists, from lawyers, into these kinds of virtual spaces in which we're co-located, in which we're doing things with other people in these spaces. And how do we self-organize? How do we construct policies or rules for action within these spaces? What do these things have to do with money? Minecraft is less so in that regard, and I think because of Minecraft's kid focus, people are thinking about it much more in terms of education. But there's a long tradition now of studies of virtuality, how people interact with one another in these kinds of online spaces that Minecraft is tapping into.
And again, we talked earlier about the distinction. We don't call this real world versus virtual world because this virtual world is real. Are there still important differences, do you think, Bron Stuckey, in the way that virtual community happens versus face-to-face or physical community?
Well, I think it can be a little different. It can be a little more spontaneous as well because you don't have any of the physical cues. You also don't have any of the physical barriers or the shyness that a child might exhibit or an adult might exhibit in a group. I'm on the servers that I'm interested in. Kids don't know who's an adult and who's a child on the server, and they very rarely want to know how old someone is. They just want to play with other people
right.
and converse with other people.
That's
and
interesting.
And I'm talking about guarded servers. So these are whitelisted. You can't go on these servers unless you're a member of this community. And I think that's a changing thing now for kids to be able to engage with trusted adults in very positive ways, often as the leader rather than the follower
yes.
in activity.
Yes.
It's difficult to imagine a physical world situation where an adult playing with a child who is not their kid would not seem strange.
Yes. Some of my previous work, I've done work on the game World of Warcraft, which was very, very hot a couple of years ago, but has cooled off a little bit in terms of the research world. And when I was a graduate student, we worked with a group of kids who were in a crafted – this is part of Constance Steinkuhler's lab up at Wisconsin – who were in a crafted group to play World of Warcraft for educational purposes. And one of the things I always found interesting about that is when the adults were playing with the kids, how often the adults were learning from the kids. The kids were very engaged. engaged, very motivated to learn how to play within the game. And thus, they found themselves now in this flipped mentorship role. How often do kids actually feel empowered to use knowledge they have about something and to teach an adult? And that can be just such a motivating and driving thing for a kid.
Before we go, I want to talk to a few more kids who've been waiting patiently on the line here. Claire in Leawood, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
So I understand you don't just like Minecraft, you actually love Minecraft. Is that right?
Yeah.
How old are you, Claire?
I'm 9.
And what's so great about it?
It's so great because you can have your own perspective. It's pretty much your own universe and you can do anything with it.
So what have you done, Claire, that is so cool? How have you used that freedom you have?
Well, I've made a lot of things. I've made desert hideaways, I've made secret bases, I've made homes, and I got this new 1.6 update with horses, and I think that's pretty cool.
It sounds pretty cool. Claire, thanks for calling. Let's talk to Ryan in Lee's Summit. Ryan, how do you feel about Minecraft?
Well, the game is, like, really awesome. I have it on the Xbox and the computer.
Oh, okay, so you can play it in more than one place. And what's your name of your character, your skin that you play with?
Well, my character name in Minecraft is Rocky Space Ryan.
Rocky Space Ryan, okay. And what do you like so much about the game?
Well, you can create things like there's this, like, Minecraft myth called Ryan, and, like,
Ryan, we are having a little trouble hearing you because the radio's on in the background. So if you can get your folks to turn that off and then keep talking.
Well, like Minecraft, like the creepy cave noises, like, make me think like Terrell Ryan is, like, right behind me and just goes away. But I know that's not true. But it keeps on creeping me out constantly when I go mining.
Ryan, thank you so much for calling. Yeah, Ryan's talking, there's the creeper, right, Sean?
Yeah.
That's a big part of the game, right?
Yeah, I think that's something we haven't talked about yet, which I think is very, very interesting that we haven't talked about it, because we want to really focus on the constructive elements of the game, in which you are building lots of things, mining, exploring, all of the elements that we see as building into a toolkit of things that use us, that allow us to create things within the game. But the game has also got a survival mode in it. And the survival mode in it, when the sun comes down, the creeper comes out, zombies come out, skeletons come out, and the spiders come out, and they try to attack you. And you have to hole up inside a building that you've constructed, or you can go out and try to fight them. And they might kill you and then scatter all of your items, and you have to go collect them later. So that's something that I don't think we should shy away from, actually, with these kinds of games, because it's actually something that's designed to motivate players to actually have a reason to build within the game. And I think it's a really interesting element of the game that doesn't really get talked about that much. It's pretty simple, really. There are monsters that come out at night that try to kill you. Try to make sure that you don't get killed by the monsters. Not terribly complex. But what it does do is it motivates you as a player, as a kid, or as an adult, to start exploring the world and figure out what you can do within the space. It gives you an impetus to actually do something within the space beyond just create.
We'll need to leave it there go ahead, Bron, really quickly.
I was just going to say it's a really interesting point that when kids have the choice of playing creative or survival, they'll very often choose survival because they like the added conditions, the added threat in trying to still build their creation within the time period before the monsters are unleashed. So kids aren't just choosing easy options.
This is all fascinating, and I wish we had more time. I want to thank both of our guests, Sean Duncan from Indiana University and Bron Stuckey, who's a fellow at Arizona State, but joining us from Australia. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you.
Honored to be here. Thank you.
Coming up next, a look at the Kansas City Fringe Festival.